Welcome to the Misophonia Podcast. This is Season 7, Episode 5. My name's Fadil Ahmad, and I have misophonia. This week, I'm talking to CJ, a college student and big advocate for misophonia in the community. I was really happy to finally chat with him. We talk about how he explains MISO, his work with So Quiet, stress as an exacerbator, and some questions for you listeners. After the show, let me know what you think. You can reach me at hello@misophoniapodcast.com or hit me up on Instagram or Facebook at Misophonia Podcast. And by the way, please do head over and leave a quick review or rating wherever you listen to this show. It helps us go up in the algorithms and just reach more misophones. Thanks for the incredible ongoing support of our Patreon supporters. If you feel like contributing, you can read all about the various levels at patreon.com/misophoniapodcast. And this episode is also sponsored by a personal journaling app that I created called Basal, B-A-S-A-L. It provides AI-powered insights into your journal entries and guides you with new writing prompts based on those entries. You can even explore many different types of therapy modalities and approaches and philosophies. Again, it's available on iOS and Android in those app stores. Check the show notes or go to hellobasal.com. All right, now here's my conversation with CJ. CJ, welcome to the podcast. Great to finally get a chance to speak to you.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
So, yeah, do you want to just quickly tell us a little bit about, well, yeah, where you are, kind of what you do?
I live in Western Kansas, and I'm about to be a grad student starting next year. I'll be an accelerated grad student, which means I haven't finished my bachelor's yet, but I'm already getting into it. Going into school psychology.
Excellent. Yeah, should be very relevant. Do you want to tell us kind of, apart from school, kind of a little bit about how you've been in the community, in the misophonia community, and helping out? You've been doing a lot of things.
I've kind of been advocating for misophonia ever since high school. When I was in debate and forensics, I would give speeches about it, and it would just make my day to hear, like, judges and other people, just like spectators, would come to me afterwards and they'd say, "Oh, I know what that is," or "I didn't know that had a name," things like that. So I've been doing things here or there. I presented to, like, the speech language pathology organization on campus, and the gender sexuality alliance on campus. Just whenever there's an opportunity to present, I will always present about misophonia.
Yeah. So what school is that again? That's University
of
Kansas?
University.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay, cool. And you said debates and speeches. Were you kind of giving speeches, or were you engaging in a debate some way about misophonia?
When I was talking about misophonia, it was informative speeches. Okay. So it was just me talking to people for 10 minutes, and I had props and everything. It was...
Yeah. Oh, what kind of props did you have?
I had this little hamper, that, like, you know, like collapsible hampers. And yeah. I had all kinds of props, like shoes, like silverware, and I had this bucket, and I would throw them into the collapsible hamper as I was saying the things, and it made people laugh every time.
Okay, cool. All of the, like, you're gonna say maybe a baseball bat to show, like, what we think of doing to people when they're triggering us. But that prop wouldn't go over too well, I'm sure. No, that's super cool. And so, yeah, since high school, that's amazing. Were you, I guess, when did you find out it had a name, misophonia? And we could talk about your background, too.
I can't remember. I did grow up with the internet. My dad was an IT guy, so very early I was always, like, in internet rabbit holes. And there's one time that it had been a problem with my family for a while, like dinner time and everything, and then I just found a video on it. I remember it being about Doritos. I don't remember the specifics, but something about some guy eating Doritos. And it explained what misophonia is, and then it's like, oh, this is a thing. This is something I can actually look into and research. And I went down the rabbit hole, read Tom Dozier's book.
And so, typical family kind of dinner time first onset.
That was a really early one. It was very severe. My first, like, vivid memory was in school, noises during exams, like. Sniffling was a big one just during exams, any repetitive noises during exams, because that's why I really believe that stress is an exacerbator of misophonia, because during exams is the time that it was most affected me. And even now, like, times when I'm really stressed in life, I have to be even more cautious about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Stress definitely exacerbates it, taking you out of Well, you're not even when you're in concentrating on something when you're just generally stressed out. Misophonia. It's not time to not a great time to be triggered. So you said during exams time, exam time. So I'm assuming that's kind of in high school that
No, like
has been
elementary
going
school,
on.
like you'd be
Oh,
amazed
okay.
the amount of like testing that they make everyone do throughout school, which is kind of why I'm going into
Oh,
school psychology, where it's like,
yeah.
I think it's ridiculous the amount of stress that we put in on children.
So, but were your family members also? Oh, so I guess was school your first trigger then? And then
Yeah,
it
I think it
later
was
got
my
into your
first
home?
and my
Okay.
most severe, but my
Yeah.
family did like, my misophonia is kind of weird, and that's what I want to talk about a little bit, where it's, I
Yeah.
feel like my activators are correlated to how much I have the most exposure to at the time. Like times in my life where I've been in school, that is when those have been the worst activators. Times when I've been with family, those have been the worst activators. And yeah, as I'm rotating, like during COVID, like some of the worst activators are ones that I didn't think about, like saliva sounds and audio recordings, things like that.
Right.
But it just has to do with what I'm see the most in my life at that time. So
Yeah.
yeah, my family,
Gotcha.
like during summer vacations and things, they were my activators.
Yeah. And what do, I mean, what how was you know, how were you reacting at the time before you knew it had a name?
Just various coping mechanisms, like putting my hair, like I usually try to keep pretty long hair, and then
Yeah.
it's getting more difficult as I'm getting older. But and then put it in front of my face. Hoodies are always good to like wrap around and hold,
Right.
just always moving your hands in some fashion.
So were you getting visual triggers as well? Is that why you were had your hair down
Yeah,
over your
visual
eyes?
activators are
Yeah.
actually like some of my worst. Like, because auditory ones, for the most part, you can block them off. There's enough tools. Like, some people would probably say otherwise, that they're just overwhelming. But for me, at least, get earplugs, get white noise, get just loud noises, and I feel safe and I feel like it's gone. Whereas visual stuff, it's a lot harder to function in life where you can't see anything. Like, I have mad respect for people who are severely visually impaired.
Right. Yeah. No, no, that's a good point. And okay, so yeah, so your visual triggers are even worse. So, how did your parents react? Like, how did your family react, as you were, what did they think as you were reacting to triggers?
So my family was kind of concerned with other things. I had a little bit of a complicated family, and it's simpler than most. Like, no one has like a normal family, but my mom was disabled. She had a muscular dystrophy disorder called Friedreich's ataxia, which is really rare. So she was in a wheelchair for my entire life. And when you have someone you need to care for who's in a wheelchair, your children's mental health kind of falls in the back burner. And that's okay, but I've learned to accept that they're just trying their best with what they had. But yeah, it felt like I wasn't understood and that it was invalidated because it's a mental
Gotcha.
health issue, and it's if you're not experiencing it, it's really difficult to put yourself in the shoes of someone with misophonia.
Right. And how about also at school? You're going through all these tests and being triggered. Were you able to get any kind of accommodations at school, or what was your reaction there?
No, that's what frustrates me, is that
Yeah.
children really can't advocate for themselves. It's every child has to fall within a box. And the administration puts more rules than they do less. Like, if it's easier to put a rule that hurts someone versus having the chance of a kid do something wrong, then they will put the rule. So it's very hard to speak up and say, "Hey, I need this," or "Hey, I'm having a bad time." Like, no, get back in your chair.
Right.
Yeah.
And what are as you got older and into high school, were you able to get were you able to find a little bit more flexibility, like a little bit more accommodation?
Yeah, as I got older, I was able to just, I could show my professors, like, it's gotten easier to talk about it, but as I got older, I
Yeah.
could show my instructors and my professors now that, oh, this is a thing. Can I wear earplugs? My earplugs aren't going to harm you. And it really just depended on the person. Sometimes they'd be like, no, I don't want you to. Sometimes, like, I probably shouldn't reveal this in a public setting, but during the ACT, our school had a free ACT provided for all students, which is really a good equalizer for rural Kansas because it's like there's so much class division when it comes to education. And during the ACT has a rule where you cannot wear earbuds unless you have like a diagnosis and you need the accommodations for it. But because it was a group thing, we had so many students from my school, and it wasn't a typical ACT, but it was proctored. I asked my ACT advisor, and they said I could wear earplugs because there's
Okay.
rules in place. Like, I can imagine someone cheating with little foam earplugs, but also why?
How would you cheat with foam earplugs though?
You could write really small.
Oh my gosh.
You could also
Okay.
store information in your calculator. Don't check your calculator, suckers.
Yeah, exactly. Interesting. Okay. And so yeah, it sounds like misophonia and all these experiences have kind of or influenced your school choice, your career path, and your education path. Am I correct in saying that? Is this kind of like what you want to focus your life on?
Yeah, basically all of my careers have been guided by misophonia. Like initially, like in middle school, I wanted to go into computer science and be one of the many misophonic software engineers that are out there.
Yeah,
And then I
I'm
ended up
one.
going into library science, and I worked at a library for many years. I still work at a bookstore. And then because they're supposedly quiet, they're really not. It's kind of worse being in a library because quiet is arguably worse than loud environments. And then I decided psychology because where better to help people with misophonia than a type of career where you're advocating for misophonia directly rather than just trying to cope around it.
Are you finding professors and people in academia around you that are also helping you advocate and like how's the support? Are you kind of like a lone wolf, kind of like still advocating for misophonia, or do you have others around you who are helping?
I feel like I'm like the only one who directly advocates for it, but people have really respected it since I got here.
And what are you so you're I guess you're in your bachelor's right now, so you're probably not doing a lot of like research, but or maybe you are. I'm just curious, kind of what kind of are you doing any work that's directly related to me so right now?
Actually, I did a research project based on your podcast last year where I went through and listening to every single podcast, I had a huge spreadsheet and I collected data. I collected where people lived, their gender that they represented as, their occupation, the activators that they listed, the emotional words they used to describe their activators. I listed all that, so I'm like 126 hours of all that, and then ran stats. Yeah, I didn't find really anything that significant. I found that in the last one, there wasn't anything too significant that I can really rely on because a lot of it was like scales of how much social support do these people have based on how they described it. And it was very much, I was consistent, but it's still very subjective. But yeah, just it
Were
was a
there
good
any,
piece.
yeah, I mean, some of the things, like I haven't even done anything qu too quantitative on my own podcast, but one of the things that has surprised me is just the amount of like childhood adversity during childhood that I've noticed. Like there's usually been something, some kind of walking on eggshells childhood situation which has come up, which kind of, I mean, definitely surprised. I would not have necessarily guessed that like a few years ago when I thought, oh, it's just some kind of like a difference in the brain. So that's one commonality that I wish could be looked at more. I'm curious if you noticed that kind of looking back at a lot of these episodes.
Yeah, the question you have to ask is how that compares to a control group, how that compares to the general population. Because I would say
I don't have any
children
control group.
and adolescents in general have a lot of walking on eggshells, like that storm and stress time in their lives. But honestly, I discovered that there were a lot of people who are very positive towards their misophonia, just generalizing. This isn't like running stats or anything, but like a lot of people who thought that their misophonia was a blessing and like gave them the ability to like point out details or to be more empathetic or all of that. Just it wasn't all, your podcast isn't all just people depressed like my life is hopeless like let's all like cope together with just this fact that we have this horrible disorder. No, it was honestly a lot of very diverse people.
Yeah, that's kind of one reason why I started it is to get a bunch of just diverse ideas and how it's affected us and what we think about it, what we think about ourselves. There have been some rough people have had some rough backgrounds, but even they have come on and said that they're able to cope, they're doing well, they're otherwise happy, funny people, but people have come on and said that they feel like they have a empathy superpower. And I noticed that when I feel like when I talk to people with misophonia on this podcast, and then I go out into the street and talk to random people, I feel like there is a, I don't know, there's a, I feel more empathy. Maybe it's just because I feel more connected with people with misophonia, but there is an empathy that I think is, or high sensitivity. There's a lot of high HSPs that come on this podcast. And I don't know, I feel like that's definitely, like you said, it's kind of one blessing that can come out of this.
Yeah, people.
I mentioned HSP. Do you identify yourself as maybe a I don't know if it's an official term, but a highly sensitive person?
No, I've talked kind of before to my friends about how when I was like 3 or 4, I was sent to therapy for reasons I don't remember, but I was diagnosed with autism. But then my parents said, "No, you're not." So I don't know if I have some other kind of comorbidity. I might. One of my therapists who wasn't certified to actually diagnose me said that I might have OCD, but I don't have anything else that like I would really like say definitively that I
identify with. Are you seeing any psychologists or therapists about misophonia?
Counselor on campus, but therapists who are just so misophonia specific end up being really pricey. So
they're pretty rare.
General stress is most of the help I feel.
Gotcha. You're stuck with you've just tried counselors on campus and so they're helping to deal with like I don't want to say regular stress, but like general kind of more general issues, not specifically misophonia.
Yeah, just general life things.
Yeah. Have you I guess a lot of your coping methods are the headphones. What do your friends around you now think? You said that, you know, doing speeches, people come up to you. Are you finding, first of all, are your friends supportive of misophonia?
Yes, my closest ones are, and I find that like the more supportive they are, the closer they are. I don't know if that's picking or that's just how it works. But some people just forget frequently, and then I'm very visible when I'm affected by misophonia, like I will just kind of freeze and internalize and they can tell that I'm just out of it.
Right.
I kind of like set myself away from people for a while. I isolated myself because I was like, all people do is activate me. All people do is just judge me. And I was in a really negative space for a while there regarding socialization. And recently I've found some people who are just really accepting. Even when I have one friend who, even when they're doing something that they think is, like, they don't know as an activator, if it is something that could be an activator, they'll check with me. I have a fairly short list of things that do activate me, but there are little things. I feel like it's a whole spectrum. Like, some people have a huge list of activators that they all affect equally, whereas me, it changes according to the time in my life.
Right. I'm curious how the experience, because I think a lot of this, we think about, like, are people taking this seriously? Like what do people think? Like, how are people judging me? Because, you know, it objectively, it seems like a silly thing being affected by sounds. And I'm curious, especially with your background, when you kind of grew up in an environment where it was kind of dismissed because there were other things going on. I sometimes even think about how it must look like to another person. It must seem so silly. And that just kind of layers onto the stress. But, maybe when you're explaining to people, do you explain it in a certain way to kind of when I try to explain it to people, I tell them I know it sounds silly, but how do you explain misophonia to other people in a way that will make them realize that, yes, it sounds silly, but it has a huge impact?
Yeah, that's one approach, is people trying to, like, you can try to humanize and say that this really bothers me or whatever, and try to get them to relate to it. But a lot of times people just can't relate to it. And so what I do personally, and I don't know if it's right, it works for me, is just spit the most science at them. And they just are so like, oh, this is a thing I don't understand. I'll let you take the lead.
I see. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. And luckily there's been a lot more research in the past few years. And there will be more coming up. So that's definitely a great approach. And what are some of the, I know you're kind of in touch with a lot of the latest science, and obviously you'll have a big impact scientifically in the future. What are some of the most interesting directions for you that you've been seeing in the community?
I'm just really interested in Kumar's mirror neurons, and I don't know how long that's going to take for us to get the next phase of that, the next research. But that's one I'm most looking forward to, I think. There's a lot of good research. I went to the CARE Day from So Quiet, and that was There's just a whole bunch of different directions we can go in. I think the priority right now should be treatment. But I'm not sure exactly. I don't really do the clinical psychology. I'm hoping to help students get accommodations. Like,
yeah,
that's why
yeah.
I prioritize treatment. It's like, you can tell us the numbers. You can tell us, like, oh, people in misophonia are, like, more creative, or, like, there's interesting things that you can find out. But what we need to figure out to help people, like, as soon as possible is treatment, like, help them with their daily lives.
Right. Yeah, when I see a lot of the research is neuroimaging, taking pictures of the brain, which is going to help understand it, obviously. But, you know, there's a lot of steps from there to get to, you know, a treatment that can kind of be derived from things like neuroimaging. What do you think we can do? What are the most promising things we can do now to help people day to day?
I think stress management is a huge one.
Mm-hmm.
There's no research behind it. I've been trying to figure out a way I can do a study on it, but I haven't been able to figure out a way that would have a good sample. But for me, change makes my misophonia easier. When it's like at the beginning of each semester, it's when things are the easiest. At the end, when I'm used to my surroundings, that's when my brain starts to pick up on, it starts to predict when the activators are going to happen, and they're the most severe. I'm wondering how changing routines can affect people with misophonia.
That is fascinating, actually, because, you know, for me and for a number of people, we grew up, we kind of developed misophonia. For a number of people, there's a lull when we go out into the world, into college, and maybe in the workplace, and it kind of like subsides a bit, or we forget about it, but then it creeps up. And I'm wondering if there is some kind of a change. I just assumed it was like, I don't know what I assumed, but yeah, maybe change is it, because you're changed, or like being born is a change. and then when, you know, after a few years, when we develop misophonia around the people we're most close to, it seems to subside some often. And I'm not a scientist, but when our environment changes, when we go into the world, when we go to college. But yeah, you're right, it does kind of creep up on you when your brain picks up on sounds when you've been around it long enough.
Yeah, it's like when you've been in an office with someone and you know that the person to your right is going to be eating a bag of chips at 11:43 every day. You know to expect that, and I feel like that makes it worse. But this is all anecdotal from my own experience, so I don't know how other people with misophonia, if they have that.
Oh, this podcast is all about exploring anecdotal ideas, because this is where, you know, hopefully we'll get ideas for research. The interesting thing is, you know, because we often think about misophonia as a fear response to kind of warn you of something. It's interesting that it's only warning you of something like long after you've gotten used to the environment, which kind of seems like the opposite.
Well, it's very efficient. I think misophonia is just your brain making efficient connections of stress for stress, where like we talk about the lizard brain, where you're in the wild and you hear, like, you know that a panther is going to come through here at this time of day to go to the water hole, or I don't know biology apparently, but like it's going to come around this time consistently. A lot of things in nature are very cyclical. They happen, like, think about a rooster crowing at every time every morning.
Right.
So it makes sense when you think about, like, you can't put everything on evolutionary psychology, but it makes sense of, like, we're not designed to live 8 to 5, and maybe there are some effects. Because people are more nomadic, and then agriculture came along, and this is where we're at now. And what is this? How is this affecting everyone differently?
Yeah. No, I guess. What I was thinking of, like, I definitely think it's a lizard. There's a lizard brain component here. It's just interesting that, like you said, when you start a semester, you don't really notice it maybe so much because there's a change, but then. It was only after a while of that routine that you start to pick up on things. And maybe it's not just an instant fear response, but I would have thought that the initial part of that change, the initial time, the life cycle of that change would be when we would be most sensitive to change at the beginning rather than later.
But I think people in misophonia are very good at coping with change. That's what I'm curious about. Mm-hmm. We seem like a very resilient group of people, and so I'm I'm wondering if people with misophonia are stronger at all, just in terms of our ability to cope with stressors.
Yeah. Have you met other, you know, people on campus who have misophonia?
I don't know if I've met anyone with like severe misophonia, but I've had people come up to me and say, "Oh, I heard you talk. I have this thing, or my friend has this thing." No one who like it seems to affect to as much of a level as me, where like my entire life is like, look outside my office, there's posters of misophonia, like so quiet things. Like it's very much you can tell I'm the misophonia guy on campus. Whereas if there are people with misophonia who are extremely affected by it, they have not come to me. There's people who like say that, oh, this is a problem for me, and but no one who cares around earbuds and.
Speaking of So Quiet, how did you get connected with Chris and So Quiet?
I heard about the cards. Actually, no, I heard about the No Gum Pledge first, way back in the day. But yeah, and then I was just like, hey, I would really like to volunteer for this because I need like a direction to go when it comes to the volunteering. And,
And yeah, no, I mean, yeah, the cards and yeah, the cards in particular have been super, super popular. Yeah, that's great. And so now that you're, I mean, I'm curious, now that you're, I guess going back to your family, now that they know what it is, are they also, you know, you said your friends are generally accommodative, at least the ones who are close to you. How about your family now? Have they over time become more understanding?
yeah, my family all knows about it, but for the most part, it's very much on me to cope with it. If I'm in a situation where I need to cope with it, like the big ones, like gum chewing is probably my biggest activator, like the jaw movement of it especially. That's an easy one to ask people to do, but other things like restless leg syndrome and just little movements that people don't even notice they're making, like I can't ask them to do that, so I just have to cope. And they don't. My family and I aren't that close, so they don't pick up on the little things, like how I just kind of freeze up.
And any other family members that you know that have misophonia, or are you just you?
My step grandmother might have it. I know there's like suppose like with like the 23andMe thing, there might be a genetic link, but so that doesn't work. But yeah, I know some people who might have mild versions of it.
And if you've listened to the podcast, you don't like to jump around, but going back to mirror neurons, I was also fascinated by that study. Yeah, what did you, yeah, what, I mean, I guess, what did you think about that, or where would you like to see that study go next in terms of, because there was the Heather Hansen, it wasn't a direct follow-up, but it was kind of a response to that, saying that it's not all orofacial. I'm curious kind of where you would like to see mirror neurons being investigated.
Especially treatment. Like, I know that for some people, imitating works, for some people, it doesn't. Yeah, just the ways that we can use this mirror
As
neuron connection.
maybe a way to kind of like suggest movements, or at least suggest some protocol as to when you're being triggered with certain sounds, maybe make a certain motion.
Yeah, to have a bigger like toolkit with you of what to do when.
Are you aware of any of any other toolkits that exist? I know you know, Dr. Gregory has mentioned things she asks she does sometimes in her clinic, which are things like playing with the sounds in your head, like trying to control, put a level of control over the sounds. And that's kind of like, I guess, kind of what the mirror neuron study also suggests, is somehow cognitively trying to regain control over the sounds. Do you think, I guess more fundamentally, do you think control is a the need for control is an aspect of misophonia and misophonia treatment?
Yeah, I think it is. I'm not sure where exactly we need to go with that approach, but I do think that's the reason why it's other people for a large part. It's when other people are doing things or things that aren't in your control, whereas if you can take a little bit of that back, it makes it less severe.
Do you find humor is also, because I find, like, you know, even if I can't do anything about it, if the other person is somehow, if I can crack some kind of a joke or make something light about it, that it kind of helps a little bit. Do you find that that is a way, also a way to, I guess, reduce stress?
I think that's a way to reduce stress for a lot of things. I don't know, that's not me funny specific. That's if you have any part in life that's giving you stress, joking about it just helps.
Yeah, stress and control. I wonder, yeah. Are you thinking about any of these things when you're going through a trigger? Are you like, or do you do anything, I guess, to kind of like reduce stress day to day? Like when you wake up in the morning or in the middle of the day, some people check in, do a body scan. Are you doing any kind of like I don't know, meditation? Are you doing anything like that during the day to kind of try to reduce stress?
I try to step away from routines. I used to be the kind of person who, okay, I'm going to do my progressive muscle relaxation. I'm going to do my yoga every morning. I'm going to, like, I had different things of like, oh, these are supposed to improve your mental health. I would try those
Yeah.
every day. And then I noticed that just by adding more things to my, I have to do this every day, it makes it worse.
Yeah.
I try to get up when my body's ready to get up. I try to avoid setting alarms if I can, which sometimes I'm busy and I have to, because life, but if I can, I prefer to do things as I feel I need to do them. Like eat when my
Yeah.
body says to eat, sleep when I need to sleep, exercise when I feel like I've been sitting all day, those kinds of things.
No, that's a good point. I have, I've had alarms set up for meditation, various things, and I always just end up ignoring them as well. So, but seeing them does add a little bit of stress. So you mentioned you read the Tom Dozier book earlier, and you mentioned progressive muscle relaxation, which I think is from his book, and I think one of the things he gets clients to do. I guess what do you think of Tom Dozier and his approach? Because he's, a little bit controversial in the
I was wondering why I hadn't heard
ecosystem.
about him from other Moosepony circles in a while,
Yeah.
because he was very revolutionary for me in high school. I don't know if I agree that the treatment works, but I
Have you
definitely
spoken to him? Like, have you or have you even gone over to California?
I've gotten in contact with him to like ask about like how much it would cost to do all that, and
Right.
but I haven't done anything with him.
Gotcha. Okay. And you, are you doing anything from, I don't know, I haven't read the book, so I'm just curious, like what's in the book, and is anything in it, has anything in it been useful for you?
I just read it in like 2019, but I can't
Okay.
remember the details. But I do remember
Yeah.
the definitely the thing about how triggers are formed, where it's very much conditioned. I agree that it is a conditioned stress response, which is some people will disagree with that. But I do think it has to do with your brain picking up on, oh, I am stressed right now. These things are happening when I'm stressed. We need to know that these things are correlated with the stress, where
Yeah.
it's just stepping over something when it shouldn't.
Right. Is part of this treatment at all trying to find that early sound and de-link it by actually finding that sound, or is it very much just kind of let's focus on your muscles and try to calm them down?
If I remember what, I'm trying to remember specifically what his treatments are, but there was like this Trigger Tamer app or something, I think that was Tom Dozier,
Right, right.
where it's like, let's try to link this to a positive thing and try to like unseat that conditioning.
Yeah, because I think a lot of his, one of the criticisms I think of any misfunding treatment is exposure therapy, and I think that's what some people get in a little bit of hot water if they're trying to prescribe exposure therapy. I think the Tamer app or one of them was about playing triggers at a low volume and then increasing the volume to try to get you to habituate.
Yeah, it's not how it works.
Yeah, right. Most people, right, doesn't help most people. You're doing the accelerated master's program. Do you have any idea what you're going to do in the master's program?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly what school psychology looks like, and like compared to like experimental psychology, where like all the opportunities I'll have. I know I get to do
Yeah.
an internship like my last year of the program, because that's the thing you have to do for licensure, but I'm going to, of course, try to do research whenever I can, and yeah, I don't have any specific
So
plans.
with school psychology, then I think the goal would be to maybe become a counselor at various schools or districts or universities.
Yeah, I would
Yeah.
love to work in rural schools where I grew up, where people don't always have access to the most updated
Right.
information, and to say that, oh, this student is having problems, let me figure it out. Let
Right,
me
right,
try
right,
to
right.
advocate for them when they can't advocate for themselves.
Right. Well, I guess yeah. We're kind of we're about like coming up to about 40 minutes. But I'm curious. Like, I'd love to hear. I'd love to hear, I guess, more about like what you have to tell people who have other people who have misophonia. But and I'll be also be curious, kind of like what you tell groups of people who don't have misophonia. Like, how do you explain you know, misophonia, just so that we can, you know, some tips, some advice for, I know we mentioned a bit earlier, but some advice for folks who are not used to explaining it. Obviously, you have a lot of experience.
Yeah, I don't have a very good elevator pitch. I'm working on it, but I'm trying to think of like all the presentations. I've used like the same slideshow for the past like 3 years, but would just keep adding to it as I'm...
Oh, so you have a slideshow. Do you have it public anywhere?
Oh, no, but I could probably put it on my blog or my website or something.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and you do have a have you been writing for the So Quiet blog as well? I've read a number of your articles, I think, over the years.
I've read a couple, and I'm hoping to get back to write more this summer. But
okay. And is your personal blog pretty active? Like, are you writing on your personal blog at least, or?
I'm not really. I'm kind of split between. I sort of work for Tiger Media Network, which is our campus newspaper. I've been writing for my honors college. I've been writing for and So Quiet. So I'm just kind of split up right now. I do have a website that I'm going to add to after I graduate.
Gotcha. I'll probably post. Okay.
If people are interested, I can post my slideshow there and put that in the.
We'll put in the show notes. Yeah. This will be up in at least a few weeks. So we'll be in touch until then. I guess anything else you wanna share with other misophones who are listening? I know you've listened to a lot of episodes because you've done a bit of a study on it. But anything you want to share? Anything else you want to tell people who are listening now?
Because I have more questions for people than I would have things that I feel like I could.
Well, actually, put in the questions because let me know the questions because I think I'll try to get people to answer via social media or whatever, and then you can see everything there.
Yeah, I want to know what people think about routines, what they think about being outdoors, because I wonder how much I wonder if misophonia, the severity of it, is impacted at all by being in nature or like. I feel like our bodies aren't built for what we're doing with them now, and I'm wondering if misophonia is kind of a backlash of that.
Mm-hmm.
Do other people chew their nails till they're stubs? Because I'm still picking at mine this entire interview.
Yeah.
Coping when you feel like freezing. That's a thing that I do. I'm like, when I am activated, I will freeze up, and I can't think about mimicking. I can't think about, I need to be reaching for this right now. I will just shut down.
That's the one question I have with a lot of coping mechanisms. Even the ones I talk about the most, like this, like self-soothing and trying to tell yourself before triggers that nothing is going to attack you. It's like we don't like to think about misophonia. So usually the time we think about it is when it hits, and then afterwards, and then when it hits, like you said, we usually freeze. We don't have time to think about it. So. I don't know how to solve that problem other than maybe writing it on your hand.
I guess thinking back to So Quiet, something that'd be a good question for you would be, how do you get involved with the misophonia community in general? Like, there seems to be this whole squad of misophonia like heads
I don't know
if you know why you're in it.
I was just some loser sitting at a table at the misophonia convention like in 2019. It was like my second convention, and it was at the the meet and greet the night before, where I was talking to Lyle, who was episode number 4 or 5, I don't remember, but then I was just like, I think it would be cool to like just interview people. And so like a few weeks later this thing started, and back then I didn't know, I knew very little. I just knew that there was the first Kumar research. I knew obviously Marsha Johnson, but I didn't really know much else. Most of the stuff we talked about today, I didn't even know. I don't know if I knew who Tom Dozier was. Obviously, he was there at the conference, but it was just kind of just starting to do something and sticking with it was how I did it. And for me, I just found out like. I just found doing the podcast, like I don't know how long it's going to last. Like there's like, everyone wants to talk about misophonia. Like a lot of people want to talk about misophonia. So it has not been hard to find people to come on the show. And it's just kind of, just kind of built from there, turned into a habit. So, it's just a matter of doing, and I'm sure Chris would say the same thing. He, You know, he started it as a passion, and because it is not in a lot of people talking about it or taking it seriously, but there's such a need that I don't think it's hard for someone to kind of get out there. And I think you're well on your path as well. I mean, you know, you're already out there, and you're choosing a education path and career path that's going to just, you know, highlight you even more, and you'll have more opportunities to advocate. But I don't know if I answered your original question, or I don't even know if it was a question, but all I'm saying is, like, yeah, there are a few people you hear about a lot, but just because it's a small world, unfortunately, still, that we're just trying to make it bigger.
Yeah, I'm just wondering kind of what makes the difference between all the people who come on this podcast and it's affecting their day-to-day lives and what they're doing, and how it all just, there's so many people with misophonia, and then they're so disconnected.
Yeah.
Like we hear about them for the podcast, and we never hear from them again, which, I mean, that's okay, but I feel like as a community, we can really band together and do some things.
Yeah, right.
And we have so many artists, like, that was another thing looking at occupation, was there's so many creative people and people in, like, diverse settings. And I know, like, it's kind of confirmation bias, like, going onto the Meets Funny podcast, and you only see people Meets Funny, you don't know how that's represented, but... Yeah, it just seems like such a big part of so many people's lives, and yet it's amazing that we don't hear about it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I guess a lot of us just kind of live in silence. I mean, look at the Reddit group has got like tens of thousands of people now. You know, those are people who obviously have identified as misophonia and have bothered to create a join the Reddit, the subreddit for misophonia. So there's a lot of people out there that are just kind of like going around day to day. Yeah, hopefully there will be. I'm sure it's not going to end with So Quiet or the podcast or other things. There'll be other groups, and maybe you'll have a big part in banding people together.
Who was the one doctor who had the study on prevalence? Was that Jane Gregory, Dr. Jane Gregory, or was that a different one?
Like on how prevalence,
it is in the.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So Dr. Jane Gregory just published one about prevalence and thinking in the UK and having it up to 20%.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that, like, we hear all the time about different personality disorders and, like, bipolar disorder and, like, disorders that have, like, a 1 to 3% of the population.
Right.
And those are the ones that are getting all the attention, which they need the attention.
I think people think they can identify with misophonia, maybe. Like, they think that it's, it's just, I'm annoyed by sounds, and that's just a more extreme, or slightly more extreme version. That could be part of the reason why it's dismissed so much. Whereas bipolar or these other things are, you know, classic associated, unfortunately, with like the classical notion of somebody who's mentally ill. Yeah, well, CJ, I mean, this has been great. Unless there's anything else you want to share, thank you for, first of all, for all this work you've done and what you're going to do in the future. And thanks for coming on the show. Thank you, CJ. And super excited to see your impact in the community over the coming years. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a quick review or just hit the 5 stars wherever you listen to this podcast. Remember, you can hit me up by email at hello@misophoniapodcast.com or go to the website misophoniapodcast.com. It's even easier just to send a message on Instagram at misophoniapodcast, follow there, or Facebook, and on Twitter we're @misophoniashow. Support the show by visiting the Patreon at patreon.com/misophoniapodcast. Theme music, as always, is by Moby. And until next week, wishing you peace and quiet.